This program has been paid in full by DTN Progressive Farmer.
As a largely positive planting season has turned into a tumultuous summer, with drought emerging throughout key U.S. growing regions, yield tours will likely be big drivers this year for a market hungry for information. How will DTN's digital yield tour fit in? That's today on Field Posts. Is a DTN Progressive Farmer podcast that dives deeper into the most important trends in agriculture to explore the business's cutting edge. I'm your host, Sarah Mock. DTN's sixth annual digital yield tour is just a few weeks away, getting started August 7th and running through August 11th. DTN's tour partner Grow Intelligence will be back with industry-leading real-time predictions of national yield for corn and soybeans, as well as much more granular breakdowns to specific state levels. Today, DTN Farm Business Editor Katie Dellinger joins us for a preview of the tour, including her expectations for what might be revealed during this unpredictable season, a discussion of Grow's accuracy in recent years, and more info on how farmers can follow along and participate. Then we'll check in with Katie on the upcoming Ag Summit Series event, and we'll offer participants a chance to chat directly with analysts from Grow Intelligence, in addition to farmers and experts from around the country. She gives us an update on a new DTN video series tackling weather, markets, and ag business, and teases a story she's currently working on involving a Canadian farmer, a grain marketing deal, and a thumbs-up emoji. All this and more right after this word from our sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by MyDTN. In today's environment, it's essential, more than ever, to get the most current and accurate information to help save your valuable resources and continue to be profitable. Get access to all the information you need to deal with this change from DTN. As the leading independent, trusted source of actionable insights and market information, MyDTN gives you accurate weather forecasts, the most extensive database of grain bids, and the most timely news and analysis from our award-winning news team. These features and more are available 24/7 via desktop, laptop, and any mobile device to be with you on the go. Learn more at mydtn.com and start a free 14-day trial. Now, back to the show.
DTN Farm Business Editor Katie Dellinger joins us today to preview the 2023 DTN Digital Yield Tour. Katie,
give us kind of the top line details. What do people need to know about the tour?
Well, I think the first thing anyone needs to know is when it's happening. It's August 7th through 11th. So we're just about a month away from doing our digital yield tour, which is powered by our partners at Grow Intelligence. Grow Intelligence has these really cool yield models for corn, soybeans, and I think 18, 19 other crops around the globe. So they're really data-driven in these algorithms. They create not just national yield estimates, Sarah, they start it down on a county level, build it up to a state and then a national level. So their yield estimates are really based on the ground up, and they take into a lot of the county by county, district by district nuances that go into what makes for a national yield, what makes for a crop, where might they be short on supply, where might they be long, a little more oversupplied in some senses. So these yield models are fantastic. We've been doing this now. I think this will be our sixth year of the digital yield tour. And I'm really interested to see what it's going to show us this year as far as a national and state-by-state yields. This growing season has been very unique in its agronomic sense and the weather conditions that are driving it, with that early spring drought in May and June, and then some of these rains that are either just in time or not enough, creating real haves and have-nots. I'm looking forward to seeing the maps of these yield estimates and what they can tell us about how that affected the outcome potential of the crop. Because there's really not a lot of data, Sarah, on how that early season dryness ultimately impacts yields.
Talk to us a little bit about what the tour kind of looks like. You mentioned it starts very local. It starts at the county level. How will the kind of information be delivered? What will people be able to learn as the tour goes on?
Well, we're a little bit different than some of the other crop tours that are out there. We start by releasing the national yield estimates for both corn and soybeans. We'll release those on Monday, August 7th. And then in the 4 days following, we will take a look at 10 of the states within the Corn Belt, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio on Tuesday, Nebraska, Iowa, Wisconsin on Wednesday, Kansas and Missouri Thursday, and then South Dakota and Minnesota on Friday. What that does is it allows us to give a really good national yield estimate up front, get those numbers that everyone really wants there, and then take a deep dive into where it looks good, where it doesn't, where the trouble spots are, and really get a chance to show and share the maps of what the pictures of the weather conditions this year have really done to yield potential across the Corn Belt. It's going to be a really interesting visual item this year that I'm excited to see. And so what that looks like for our website for dtnpf.com, my DTN, what it'll be is a daily news story. We usually try and have these up early to mid-afternoon and get those out there with the latest numbers. So we'll also announce that on our socials, on Twitter and on Facebook when that comes out. So those are places to watch for information once we get our story published for the day. We're also going to be doing a series of videos and different conversations to go along with the digital yield tour this year.
I want to dig into that a little bit more, especially from a farmer's perspective. I'm looking at my state. I'm looking at this very detailed map. How is it different than what else is available out there, and how else I might understand what kind of the yield picture looks like as we get towards harvest?
So historically, the big one is USDA and their yield estimates that come out. This month in July, that the yield estimates are from WASDE. Those are guesstimates. In August, the National Ag Statistics Service starts putting out its yield estimates, but the first one in August is based solely on surveys. Its September estimate from NAS will include its objective yield data. So that's the one where USDA's estimates begin to have a little bit of statistical significance and some real data behind it. Until then, USDA is really bound by some different rules constraining how much it can consider X, Y, or Z factors. So they've got a lot of limitations or different limitations on how they can put together their yield estimates. The other organization or another type of information on crop conditions on a larger scale that people might look to are crop tours, such as the Pro Farmer Crop Tour. One thing that, those tours can do is that people actually go out and walk in the fields and see everything, and they get to measure and get really specific on the fields they're in. But those types of tours have a couple of limitations, Sarah. First is it's highly dependent on what fields you stop in. Did the driver cherry pick the best field, cherry pick the worst field? Was it an average field? So there are always questions about whether each number in there is really representative of a general area. And those routes through a county, they might get one or two counts per county. And so you've only got a limited amount of data for each spot. So while it might create a larger number in the end, on average, it just doesn't paint as good of a picture on the local county or even region to region state. I think a lot of those results are regionalized when they issue them. For that reason, is because it's more of an average that you want to take over a broad area. The nice thing about GROW's yield estimates and the digital yield tour that we get to do with them when we get a chance to really see that data, what's interesting is it's every county in those 10 states we cover. It updates every single day when new data becomes available. And let's dig into that just a little bit. Their yield models take into account hundreds of data points per district. So things like USDA's crop progress report, the drought monitor, land surface temperatures, precipitation, evaporation, incredible amounts of data about climatological. It brings in all of the forecast models. It brings in all of the actual precip models, radar data. The points, there's a lot of it, and it's hundreds of things. And it updates from every county across the country in those 10 states every day. So we're getting an updated number as conditions are changing. So GROW's numbers evolve. They do update and change daily, generally not too much by the time we get to August. They're much more volatile right now. And the reason why we're not doing this deep dive in the middle of July is because that data is just not reliable enough yet. Once we get into that second week of August, the margin of error shrinks significantly. And so we're able to get a much closer look at what that crop is doing in August. And usually with us getting that national number out ahead of time, WASDE, the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Report, is usually that week as well. And so that will be on Friday, the week of the yield tour. And we'll be able to really get a good comparison between what GROW's models are telling us and what USDA is hearing and seeing in its surveys of farmers.
Talk to us a little bit about maybe last year, the last couple of years, thinking of how early relative to maybe USDA's numbers that this tour is, how reliable have the numbers been?
Last year was a little bit different because the crop got off to a slower start. And so when we were in that second week of August, the crop was a little bit further behind than normal. And the NDVI, the Normalized Vegetative Differential Index, was a little bit off because of the date and time of where that crop progression was. So what we found with GROW's models was we had a digital yield tour estimate of 167.2 bushels per acre. That was a lot lower than what anyone else was really saying at the time. And that was really because of some of the concerns about crop conditions and whatnot. ProFarmer came out with something very similar, 168. And in the end, though, the crop was a bit higher than what either had seen on corn. USDA's final was 173. So both tours were off a little bit. But if you look over the years, GROW has a really good track record of getting close to the January 1, the final USDA number. USDA in their January numbers is what GROW tries to measure themselves against. And what we've seen over the years is that GROW does a really good job. It usually gets within about 2 or 3 bushels. Some years it's been closer, some years it's been a little further away. And that's been pretty good for corn. On soybeans, they've had, last year they were really good. They were just about half a bushel off from what USDA said at the end. They predicted that a lot sooner than anyone else, including USDA, that the bean crop would come down a little bit. So we've seen some good track records with them as well, being pretty close on the bean side. And what I think the value of it, though, Sarah, is in that picture of the state by state, is it's that you don't just get a national yield number. You can see a picture with it that shows where the hotspots are, where it's struggling. And I think it's really good information for farmers to know when they look around themselves in their area. Most of them will probably know that, hey, we don't have much of a crop here. And they can understand that might come into their local grain elevators and their plans to originate grain. GROW really serves the grain originators in some of the agribusiness markets. That's their primary clients. And so what some of this does is it helps show the draw areas for certain crops. Where are the supplies? Last year, what it really showed was there was this pull to the west. The west was deficient in grain. East was really high and there was a lot of arbitrage. So there were a lot of trains moving from Illinois to Kansas, getting corn from where it was bountiful to where it was in deficit. And so I think this year's map will probably be a lot more smaller pockets and different views there. I don't know that there is going to be as much of a east-west trend. There could be. It could be very different with it wet in the west and east, the drought conditions balancing out there. But that's the type of things you get to see in the pictures, is where it's really going to be hard and where it's not.
I think people are probably still a little bit more familiar with an in-person, on-the-ground yield tour. Talk a little bit about how you ground truth GROW's models with farmer experiences on the ground.
Our reporting team and our editorial team is always in contact with farmers throughout the growing season. And one of the things we always do with this tour is always reach out to a couple in every state, try and get as many comments and thoughts and input as we can, give them a chance to reflect. I'll let them know what GROW's numbers might be for their county and whether they think that's about right, a little high, a little low, and really get an idea of what's happening in the ground. So when we get into these state stories, we paint a really good picture, not just of the numbers and the data, but what people are really seeing, because there are things you cannot see from a satellite that you cannot get from, you know, how 20 plus years of data history. What some of the farmers I know, like Mark Nowak in Minnesota, who's got 50 years of farming under his belt, there's experience out there that you miss in some of these things, but some of those other types of tours do get. And we try and balance that out by bringing those voices into our stories.
And let us know, as people are learning about the tour, getting excited for it, how can people follow along? What should they be on the lookout for?
We are always going to be posting and sharing conversations on Twitter and on our Facebook page. So those are places to get involved. If you are out in your fields and you get a yield check in your county, we would love to see pictures and we would love to know what your estimate of that crop is. And just so we can really all share the picture.
Shifting gears a little bit to talk about some other DTN events that are upcoming. I know there is a new Ag Summit series event in the works. Talk to us a little bit about what's coming up.
I'm really glad you brought it up, Sarah, because it's also fairly related to our digital yield tour. Our Ag Summit series events have been really well received by our attendees, and we're excited to bring another one to everyone out there that listens. What we'll be talking about on August 15th, it is the Tuesday following the digital yield tour, we're really going to have a deep discussion about projecting 2023 crop yields. What's it look like out there? How big is it? And we're going to start off with the folks from Grow Intelligence. They're going to join us and really give an update. So I'm hoping they will share updated national yield numbers. So in order to get those, that'll be exclusive to the DTN Ag Summit series, updated yield numbers from them. But it'll also be a chance to ask questions. And I found this will be really, in my reporting on this throughout the years, being able to have conversations with Grow's analysts when they can share their screen and go through their models and their data and just go from graph to graph and tell a story. It's very fascinating. And I would really encourage anyone who follows our coverage of the Digital Yield Tour to join us for this event. It's free, so you can come and you can interact with them on that piece. But just like with the Digital Yield Tour stories, we will have farmers on the agenda. We always like to do updates from the fields or conversations about the issues that are going on with farmers. So this year, or this time, we're going to have our View from the Cab farmers who are working on that series with our crops technology editor, Pam Smith. They'll do a conversation about those crop conditions. I know Zach is in the northwestern corner of Missouri and Chandra and Mike are in North Dakota. So they've got some different issues going on this year and we'll have a good conversation about that. We'll take a little look ahead to fall fertilizer application purchasing and purchasing fertilizer for next year. The price of anhydrous is back near around a five-year average, which is quite different than where it was last fall. So we're going to have Alexis Maxwell, she's the fertilizer analyst at Green Markets, come in and talk about what farmers need to know about the fertilizer industry. I've known Alexis for about a decade back from her work at Landworth. So she's also worked for a couple of different fertilizer companies over the year in the sales and purchasing and market research areas. So she's really well-versed in some of the broader fertilizer industry issues, and I'm excited to have her come and talk to farmers. It's something that she is really excited for as well. And then we're going to take a weather and markets outlook like we usually do in these summit series, because that's such valuable information for growers out there. They need to know what the weather is going to look like for harvest, what it's going to be like for the second half of August for that soybean pod fill. The rainfall forecasts are really going to matter. And so we're going to be taking a look at that with DTN Ag Meteorologist John Berenick. And then Todd Hultman will join us for his session on markets, where he's really going to look at this unusual year as it heads into the home stretch. What does it mean for corn yields? He's going to bring it all together at the end of the day, and we're going to have a good discussion of what the yield production picture means for the balance sheet, both in the US and globally, and then what that means for farmers and their profitability stocks, what it means for prices, what that means for farmers in their marketing plans in the year ahead. So we're really going to be answering a lot of big questions and topics in a very short period of time. I just talked for 4 or 5 minutes and it was about a 2-2.5 hour agenda. So we're going to get a lot of really good information in a very short amount of time. It's worth it to watch. If you register, you can watch it later, but you can also listen to it on the go.
I know that for the last summit series, which was in the midst of planting, getting a chance to one, hear from farmers, which it sounds like we're going to be able to do again, but also maybe do a little bit more of the chatting, the networking, the getting in touch with folks who are also at the event was a focus. Is that going to be something that folks can expect to do again this time around?
Yes, we're using a virtual events platform called Hoova that has more of that built-in messaging, chat, polling capability. So we're looking forward to using that software again. If you've attended any of our virtual Ag Summit or Ag Summit series events, the same login and information works. It'll be just a streamlined process for all of them to get registered.
So speaking of John Brannick and Todd Holtman, two dear friends of the show here on the podcast, it sounds like you are also doing some new content with them, a little bit more regular check-in. We talk to John about once every 2 or 3 months here, and then Todd once a month, but sounds like you're getting a chance to check in with them a little more often. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, one of the great things about working in our newsroom is I get so many great coworkers. And we were talking one day in a morning brainstorming meeting, we do it every day at 10, about other ways we can cover the drought and market situation. This was in mid-June when the corn market was just taking off. And it was a question of, okay, what's really the issue here? And what we decided to do after writing a couple of stories was John, Todd, and I hopped on a video session and recorded a conversation. And it was just a way to have a conversation about what we're talking about in all our various places on DTN, because our weather commentary, our market commentary is often in very separate places. And a lot of what John and Todd do is available on a subscription basis. And so not everyone who's familiar with the DTN PF public or free website is familiar with all of the things that John and Todd do. So it was nice to bring them together for a conversation that's available to everyone about what's going on in these spaces and in a way to get further in depth. Because one of the things I've learned from John is about the weather forecasting models and how they don't handle thunderstorms very well, or they have a hard time predicting where the types of these scattered thunderstorms or the ones that a front's going to move through, but is it going to hit over northern Iowa or northern Missouri? Where is it going to go through? Models aren't necessarily very good at predicting that until you get much closer to the day. So that's why we saw a lot of fluctuation in the markets and the feelings earlier on in June, because the weather models were going left and right and left and right. And so being able to have these conversations with John and Todd, you can get deeper into some of those things in a way that I'm able to understand and really enjoy talking about. And I hope that our viewers and our readers enjoy it as well.
I want to ask as well in our last couple of minutes about other stories you're working on. Obviously, you're not DTN events 24/7. So talk to us about other stories that are in the works or that you're excited about covering in the next couple of weeks.
So this week, I have a couple of interviews set up with ag lawyers. I'm really interested in hearing what they have to say. I don't have much information yet, but here's the story, Sarah. There's been a story that's come out and been a little bit viral in the social media scape over the past few days. It's about a Canadian grain farmer who lost a dispute with a grain merchandiser, a grain terminal, over a contract. And the real hitch in here is that contract was hinged on a thumbs up emoji. What had happened, this farmer and the grain merchandiser were texting about a deal. They had come to an agreement. The merchandiser sent him a picture of the contract and he sent the thumbs up emoji. And when this contract eventually came due, the farmer did not deliver the grain as the contract had stated. And so the merchandiser took him to court. A judge had said that, yes, that contract was valid with the thumbs up emoji. There are some facts here that are interesting to note. This wasn't a one-time occurrence. Apparently, this farmer and this elevator manager had done it multiple times before, where the farmer's similar response was, yeah, okay, or a short one-word phrase, and then he delivered on the grain. So there was a history of deals being done this way in that case. And so I'm going to be visiting with Rusty Rumley from the National Ag Law Center later this afternoon to talk about what are some of the takeaways here for farmers. Would that be the same case in the United States? Is our law different than in Canada? Sort of answer that one off the top. But then also just being aware of contracts and what you do and how you should handle those. Everything's trying to be easy these days. We all have cell phones. We're carrying them around. They're miniature computers. We can do most everything from it. Let's just make sure we're doing it in the way that best protects our business interests. So I'm visiting with Rusty Rumley and Tiffany Lashmit from University of Texas A&M to talk through what they would recommend for farmers. So I'm really looking forward to putting that piece together. I think a thumbs up emoji, I use it a lot of times just as a sign of acknowledgement. Yeah, I heard you. Not necessarily agreement. So wanting to make sure we're using the most concise and precise language is an important thing for farmers. And it's not something you always think about with text messages, which is a much more casual form of communication.
I wanted to check in on a couple of other stories too. I know that you have done a little bit of research recently on kind of the state of grain storage and how elevators are responding to that. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about that.
So Sarah, one of the things that's Really interesting. I know interest rates are hitting everyone, either on the consumer or the business level. And one of the businesses it's really having an impact on right now, our grain elevators have a much higher interest rate in general in the next year. A recent report from CoBank says that the average interest rate for grain merchandisers is forecast at 7.75% for the 2023 growing season. And because of the way they work, they elevators, you buy a bushel of grain and they hold it and they carry it and they sell it at a time when the price is higher at a later date. And so there is an interest component to that business, to that cost of carrying and holding that grain. And the way these interest rates have gone up for grain that's been in storage and that they're holding longer, their profit margins have gone either flat to negative because they're paying so much to carry that grain. So that's a way that that very slim margin that these elevators run on they buy and then they sell, that margin gets really eroded. And so what CoBank said was that for corn, the cost of carry or storing grain compared to last year is up to about 3.1 cents per bushel for corn, or 21% higher than last year. On beans, it's up, it's at about 7.8 cents per bushel per month. And that's 42% higher than last year. And so on wheat, it's up 50%. It's at 5.2 cents per bushel. So the interest rates are really having an impact in the grain elevators. And the big takeaway was that those costs do tend to get passed down in the form of the basis. So that might cause some softer basis out there for farmers who are looking into their cash grain markets and trying to decide when's a good time to sell, and some of those impacts in there. If they're seeing something lower than seasonally is normal, that would be the reason would be those interest rate impacts.
Any other things you wanted to touch on again or circle back to or say more about?
I think, you know, Sarah, this is a really interesting growing year. We went into it with a very bearish outlook all the way across in the grain markets. Everything pointed to El Nino is coming. We're going to have more favorable weather forecasts. I think the drought and the dryness really crept up on people in May. And then in June, it really became noticed by the market. Once it was noticed, it was parabolic up and down. And I think there's a lot of questions out there now. I think we look at it here in June, we saw that acreage report from USDA that farmers planted far more acres of corn than they were expecting. What that does to the overall production potential of the country is going to be important. It adds some of that bearish weight back into this market. So the question is, yes, there's drought. There was drought early. How big of an impact, how much damage is it going to have is really the big question everyone wants to know, because there's really not a good comparison. Everything seems very variable. So we're going to be talking about this in a lot of different avenues and ways as a general theme throughout the rest of the summer. And it's a story to watch. It's constantly changing, but it's one that's interesting. Just like every year, it has its features, and this one's got a lot of nuances.
To follow the 2023 DTN Digital Yield Tour and all of Katie's reporting on ag business and more, check out dtnpf.com. And follow the tour on social media with the hashtag DTNYieldTour23. To sign up for the Ag Summit Series event on August 15th, head to dtn.com/AgSummit to register. And to check out Katie, Todd Holtman, and John Baranek's latest video series in the news, head over to dtnpf.com and select the video tab, where you'll find their installments under special reports. This episode of Field Post was brought to you by the team at DTN Progressive Farmer, with special thanks to Katie Dellinger. This episode was produced and edited by me, Sarah Mock, with support by Greg Hillier, Susan Payne, and Kylie Swanson. And a big thanks to all of you for listening. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And until next time, remember, the future of farming is here. This episode is brought to you by DTN Hay Timer. Hay and forage quality isn't just about yield. It also relies on the perfect weather window to ensure a good crop. Use DTN Hay Timer, part of MyDTN, to quickly assess risk by viewing maps specifically designed to show circumstances affecting hay quality. Pennsylvania producer David Graybill said, quote, "Other weather forecasts were not accurate enough. As DTN Hay Timer shows, it takes the right combination of drying to preserve the crop. I would guess we lost 3 to 4 times the value in crops that it would cost us to keep our DTN subscription for the year." DTN Hay Timer is part of the MyDTN platform. Visit mydtn.com to start a free 14-day trial.